Internet, welcome to episode 105 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast is in a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me as always is my lovely, wonderful hostess, Erin Blint. How you doing, Erin?
I'm feeling better than I did last week, although it has been a week of, We're going to address some of the more recent developments, and just like I was in high dudgeon last week, you've got a few bees up your bonnet and burrs up your butt, and we're going to hear about that. For me, though, I'm actually looking forward to this next week because I'm going to my first convention in months. That's a confinement, aka not Liberty Con. And I'm going to go up and I'm going to meet Mad Mike and a bunch of other people, and I'm going to shoot machine guns, and I'm going to talk about OBS, and it's going to be awesome. Wicked awesome. And partly because I've got some stuff to get ready for, because, gosh, it's been a while since I've gone to a convention. I feel like I'm kind of out of the loop. I mean, last week, I literally thought I had 2 weeks until the convention when I had only one. So I've got to get my stuff ready. And I just decided, you know what, it's June, I'll give the blue-collar prepping people a week off. You know, there you go, summer vacation, and I didn't have to edit today, and that was great. And so I've just had sort of a light day, and I've gotten stuff done, and I felt really productive, and I'm not exhausted as we record tonight, and everything is going along really well, and I have to admit I'm afraid that I'm about to run straight on into a figurative brick wall. But other than my creeping fatalism, I'm feeling great. So how are you doing, Weird?
Oh, that's awesome. I'm doing okay as well. Things are starting to be relaxed here in Massachusetts. A local radio host put up a poll question and the question was, will Massachusetts be the last state to open in the union? And it was getting like a large number of people voting yes. And I'm like, oh, these are just people just beating their drums. And then I started thinking about it and going, you know what? There are some data points that say that we might be. I mean, we're one of the hotbed states as far as deaths are going and mismanagement of patients with the coronavirus, etc. And on top of that, there's a lot of data points that say that our governor is kind of Andrew Cuomo's little fanboy, and he's doing what old Big Andrew wants to do, and that's it. So the theory is that, like, New York's probably going to be one of the last states to unlock, and then we're not going to unlock until he says it's okay, is how I'm predicting it. Hopefully I'm wrong, but we just got word that public outdoor facilities are going to start opening up, including playgrounds, and my daughter has been dying to get on a playground. She just gets so upset every time she sees one all roped off, and just like, oh, I want to play on the playground. And I'm like, yep, yeah, well, hopefully sometime soon. And then got the word that supposedly is supposed to be today. And so we went to one playground that has a fence around it, and it still had the sign that said park closed, and the gate was padlocked. And so then we went to another one, and this one is not fenced in. This one's open. And there was a sign that says park closed, and the playground was filled with kids. And I'm just like, she's like, Daddy, somebody's breaking the rules. I'm like, you want to break the rules too? Let's break the rules.
Did she?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Breaking the law, breaking the law, dun, dun, breaking the law, breaking the law.
That continues the trend of my kindergarten daughter having a severe case of senioritis. We're still having a school day here, and little girl didn't crack a book until about 1:30 in the afternoon. I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday of last week. My wife had some time off, and she just went, you know what? If you want to go edit the podcast or do something, I'll handle the schoolwork. And I just showed her where she could get all the lesson plans and all that stuff. And I came up 2 hours later, and she's just like, I need to take a break. Just like, oh, good. I hate to see you in this state, but I feel very validated on how goddamn exhausted I feel all the time.
So I'm somewhat confused because, one, you said she was kindergarten aged, and I don't remember ever having anything remotely approaching homework during kindergarten. And two, it's June. I mean, school is, okay, not like we really had school, but school would be out by now. So why are you continuing to teach her?
Well, so school is, at least according to the calendar, we didn't get the email from the teacher this week. Didn't specifically mention the last day of school, but the last day of school is supposed to be, for patrons of the show, you're listening to this on the last day of school for my daughter. Those that are listening to this in the broad release, we should be in summer vacation in Massachusetts now. So
really,
No. So we're still, it's June 17th was the official end of the school year in Massachusetts.
Is it because of all the snow days?
No. We only had I think two. So not that many. So I think that's
okay.
Just standard. It's not homework. It's just schoolwork, since she's not going to school and she's going to be going to first grade next year. It's not like everyone's just gonna say do over. It's everyone is advancing. High school seniors are graduating. It's actually a matter of fact, my parents just sent me a picture of their next door neighbor up in Maine. He in his graduation gown and his little honor society sash and all that stuff. So yeah, congratulations, Tommy, if you're listening to this. And that's all going on, but
that's just weird because down here in Florida, school ends sometime. I think it depends on the districts and how many hurricane days we've had and things like that. It's either like the last week of May or the first week of June thereabouts. And so it's just really weird that, you know, your school will end halfway through June. Huh.
You might start it at a different time, too. Cause it
well, be- yeah, that's true, because we start in, like, mid-August. When do you start?
Yeah, it's usually sometime in September.
After Labor Day?
Usually after Labor Day. I believe it was the week before Labor Day this year. It's always
September, right.
But that is how it lines up. And I think the big reason for that is that modern schools now all have air conditioning, but for the longest time in New England, that no school had air conditioning. So the idea of starting school when it was still hot, like August, it was just counterproductive because no one's going to get anything done when it's like 90 degrees in the classroom.
Fair enough. So now that we've bored our listeners to death by talking about school years across the country, maybe we can reel them back in by talking about what has your nethers in a twist.
Well, so first up, I would just want to start with a little bit of current events, and it's international news, but I saw these news stories and I'm like, oh, we got to mention it on the show. So New Zealand, everyone knows New Zealand. They recently just got a news story, actually, that the day we're doing this, it was all over the wire that supposedly their final COVID-19 patient has recovered. And so they have declared the country of New Zealand is COVID free. So good for them. But the bigger issue is they are having record high violent crime, including gun crime in New Zealand this year.
Wow. Who could have predicted such a thing?
Everybody this is what happens when you enact gun bans. The violent crime does not go down. If you are lucky and you have banned guns, violent crime will stay the same, but it never goes down. It always goes up. And the only time it has ever happened was in Missouri when they got rid of their little Jim Crow, permission slip. I can't remember if it was a permit to purchase. And that is the one thing that anti-gunners always talk about if you ever bring up the gun control increases violent crime, gun laws save, guns save lives. They'll always point out Missouri because that is literally the one time it's ever happened. And it is the exception that proves the rule. So yeah, New Zealand did that and their violent crime went up. Oh yeah. And The other news is that Canada has just officially released. Well, they're not officially. They're being kind of quiet about it. But news is coming out that indeed Canada's quote unquote assault weapons ban includes a whole bunch of sporting arms, including single and double barreled shotguns.
What?
Mm-hmm. According to the bulletin released that we talked about with the weird audio fist, in that, I mean, executive order, edict, I don't know what the specific word for it is, it banned any firearm over 20 millimeter in bore diameter. And in fact, that covers a whole bunch of shotguns, specifically shotguns that have screw-in chokes, because the barrel, it would specifically be with the chokes removed, because you could open the choke up and make the barrel. That's as big as you can make the barrel. And it makes those larger than the legal size. And so therefore, even if you had a single shot shotgun, especially like a single trap gun, like the most sporting of sporting guns, it's a shotgun with like one barrel and usually a gigantic rib and all that, and then it'll have a choke tube on it. And that could potentially, I would not be surprised if they go in and fix it before this goes into effect. I mean, they've got 3 years before the amnesty ends. But yeah, they're very well could be going after sporting guns as well. And I mean, I really point these out just because, yeah, it's other countries. And honestly speaking, you know, when other countries talk about, oh, the United States, your stupid gun laws and all that, I'm just like, you know what? Mind your own damn business.
Are you sure you meant 20 millimeter?
Yes, 20 millimeter.
All right, so weird. What I'm hearing is that by banning anything that's 20 millimeters or more, okay, so they've gotten rid of 12 gauge, and that's the single most common hunting and sporting shotgun gauge. So I guess that just leaves 20 gauge and 410?
In theory, I read somewhere that actually if it had a fixed choke, then it's probably fine. Let's see. Yeah, the 12 gauge is naturally is 18.5 millimeter, and so therefore when you add in the choke tube with that added width needed to accept the tube, it would bring it up to 20 millimeter, and so
it's those extra 2 millimeters that make them deadly. Yay.
Again, this is how gun laws work. This is why you always hear anti-gunners, when they're talking about magazine bans, they start talking about AR-15s with 100-round drum magazines. Because, okay, 100-round drum magazines, I don't personally have a problem with however goofy huge you want your magazine to be. But, you know, we could at least argue that, yeah, I mean, 100-round magazines, a little on the excessive side. I mean, it's also heavy. But they're not talking, they talk about that because they want to shock people. They want to scare people. But in fact, they're talking about 10-round magazines. And when you suddenly say no one should be able to buy an 11-round magazine, a lot of people are going to be like, actually, I'm totally fine with 11, 12, 15, 17-round magazines. I might have an issue with a 50-round or a 40-round or a 120-round, but 15 rounds is just fine. So that's just the goofiness of gun laws. And of course, also, you have that idea of the 10-round magazine is totally fine, but an 11-round magazine, if you happen to have... Smith & Wesson got screwed. They made the 4006 pistol for their 40 Smith & Wesson cartridge, and that happened to be... They were using the 9mm platform as a design for it, so it just happened to be that the 15-round 9mm magazine was reduced down to 11 rounds, and I think it was for 8 months to a year they were able to sell the full-size magazines, and then the ban went through and they had to literally tool up to make a magazine that could not seat that last round. Just so dumb. All right, well, now let's shift gears back to the United States. I am pleased to say that it appears that the rioting has calmed down, and now we're back to essentially peaceful protests. I'm sure there's a couple of angry jerks in every group. I'm not gonna single stuff out. It seems like things are going much better. There's really just a couple of bad nights in Boston. I don't know about your area, Aaron.
Well, it depends on how close you define my area. There wasn't anything in my sleepy little town. There wasn't anything in Daytona Beach that I was aware of. Really, the most that happened was there were a couple of protests, of demonstrations, of whatever, in Orlando, which is over an hour away from me. And some of those turned violent because there was at least one agent provocateur in there. But, yeah, nothing near where I live.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, we were certainly concerned about the whole world losing its mind last week.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it kind of lost its mind a little bit.
Yes, it has. And what I have on my mind right now is the current call to defund police departments. And specifically, that's actually happening in Minneapolis because last I've heard, the city council has passed a veto-proof resolution to dissolve the Minneapolis Police Department. Now, I'm not going to defend the MNPD because I've heard a lot of terrible things about them. But, well, it seems to me that one of the problems we Americans have as a culture is that when we see a problem, we don't react rationally. We overreact. We overcorrect. So as an example, a lot of people hated George W. Bush. He was too conservative. And so the thinking went, and I'm not casting aspersions, it was literally, we need someone far, far to the left. And so we elected Obama. And then Obama has his turn, and Americans decide, well, we really didn't like Obama, so we're going to go far, far to the right. And it just seems like we are the anti-pendulum. Instead of calming down and coming to a center, we have to go to further and further extremes. And I don't know why this is. It just seems to be the way we work. And this defunding the police department is a good example. Because it seems to me, the sensible thing to do would be to say, yes, there is a problem with this police department. So we will bring in state or even federal level investigators. We will investigate it with a fine-tooth comb. We will fire people. We will arrest and prosecute people if that is what the situation deserves. And we will get rid of all the bad cops, and the remaining good cops will be retained and promoted, and we will have more stringent hiring practices in order to bring in good cops. And that's the sensible thing to do. The unsensible thing to do is say, this isn't working, so shut down the police. Because who are you going to get to actually ensure the peace and serve the law in the city? Now, I know that in a lot of places, county deputies have been brought in. And a very good example of this was Camden, New Jersey in 2018, where they completely defunded and fired their police, and the policing was taken over at the county level. Okay, there's a problem, though, and it's a problem of scale. So let's just compare Camden, New Jersey in 2018 with Minneapolis in 2018. The population of Camden was 73,973. The population of Minneapolis in 2018 was 425,403. Okay, that's an entire decimal point difference. The area of Camden, New Jersey, 10.3 square miles. The area of Minneapolis, 57.5 square miles. That's a very, very significant difference. And the traditional method isn't going to work. And I have no idea how they're going to do it. I mean, the Camden police was disbanded. And according to the article, it was reimagined and born again as the Camden County Police Department, with more officers at lower pay and a strategic shift towards community policing. But how's that going to work in a city that large with that population? And just even if you do bring in county deputies and state troopers, it isn't the same skill set. Just because you are a law enforcement officer, the skills aren't necessarily interchangeable. As an example, okay, Andy Griffith, fictional, I know, he was a great small town sheriff. He wouldn't know anything about policing in a big city, and you wouldn't expect him to. You wouldn't take an FBI agent and put him in a National Park Service role, because even though they are technically police services, it's not the same skill set. And what works at the county level will not work at the city level because the environment is different and the skills are different. And so what I think we're going to see here, well, the good news, at least what I'm taking from it, is that hopefully this will put the nail in the coffin, at least for a generation, of gun control. Because I don't see how they're going to effectively police that city, which means crime will go up.
Probably precipitously.
Yes, much like with Detroit. I mean, Detroit these days, I mean, it's never really recovered from its low point of 50 years ago. And there are areas in Detroit where the police just don't go. And I think that's going to happen here. And the crime will rise. And businesses will leave because they don't want to be robbed, looted, burned. Why should we stay here if there is no police to protect us? So they leave, and they take prosperity with them. So, of course, there is then more crime because there's not enough money in the community, and it's only going to get worse. And then if you've got police who are not able to respond in a timely manner or not responding at all, then we are going to see a move towards, well, you're on your own. And to a certain extent, we saw this, and Oddball's going to touch on this. When the COVID started happening, people said, you know, the police aren't going to show up because of the illness. I'm going to need a defensive weapon. We are already going down that track. And that's only going to accelerate in Minneapolis when this goes through. And so, okay, it's a good thing that people are armed. We are all for that. On the other hand, it's bad when people have to be the police, because as someone once said, the police don't protect us from the criminals. Not really. The police protect the criminals from us. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, well, humans have this strong drive for justice and revenge. And we are told that we don't need to take revenge because the state exists and the state will send the police to enact a form of revenge, which they call justice, for us. And that's what keeps a lot of people from going out and committing vigilantism. Well, the police will make them pay. They will serve their time. But if there's no one there to arrest them, a lot of people will go, well, I guess I got to kill this guy. Mm-hmm. And so I find myself having very, very mixed feelings about this, because more guns in the hands of responsible citizens, good, but more crime and therefore the necessity for more defensive gun uses, bad. Anything that removes the power of the cities and gives it back to the state, this is good, but rampant crime and lowering of standard of living within the cities, that's bad. And so I'm just looking at this and going, oh my God, you are going to get exactly what you deserve. I don't think you've thought this through.
Yeah. Another example of to point out is the look at the gangs, look at drug culture, look at gang culture. These are people that are by their very nature living outside of our legal system. Just by nature, if your primary vocation is selling cocaine or selling heroin, there's really nothing about your life that you want the police dabbling in whatsoever. And so because of that, if you have any complaints, if you have any concerns, you're going to handle it in-house. And also another thing that I think you're alluding to is intimidation becomes a huge factor. is the, you can't just say, I'm going to call the cops, or, you know, or just know that you see a cruiser driving up and down your street. So the idea is if someone tries to rob your store, there are police here. That just that natural, it's not really a threat. It's just knowing that law enforcement is a thing that exists.
It's a deterrent.
When there isn't that anymore, now you have to be the guy that hangs the sign up in his store. Nothing in this store is worth your life, and just be generally tough guy and threatening so that people know that, no, go, if you want to screw around, go screw around somewhere else. I'm not the one to be trifled with. And that's, it's not a good way to go about life. Also, what's a way that's not a good way to live your life is what's happening right now. We had a few weeks ago, there were the Michigan was getting a lot of them against the other governor there, who's been really strict with her restrictions on people and ignoring them herself by opening up her own camp while refusing letting people go into their camp. Which, I mean, how dumb is that? Like, if you've got
is this the same governor who appeared at a march without wearing a mask while demanding other people wear masks, mm-hmm. and not open their businesses? Or am I thinking of another idiot?
No, it's Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
Same
idiot. And she's awful, and I have nothing nice to say about her whatsoever. And the big statement is, yes, she was talking about you need to wear masks. All these people were talking about when people showed up and said, open up the state. We're ready to get back to work. We're ready to start doing stuff where, you know, the curve has been flattened. We're done playing. You talked about flattening the curve. Now the bargain has been reached. Let's move on. Let's open the state back up. And there were all, I think she actually extended the lockdown thanks to you people. Look what you made me do. I think that's my recollection.
Yes, I remember the same thing. It was very much a petulant, oh, you don't like it? Well, here's another month of quarantine. And if you don't like it, I can extend it longer.
Yeah. And so they had that. And then also one big thing you had is you had people from the medical community going up and saying, by you guys protesting, by you guys getting together, you're going to cause another spike. You're going to extend this, the pandemic. You're going to make it worse. And, you know, oh, you guys want to get your hair cut. Is grandma dying worth getting your hair cut? Was what I heard a lot. Heck, I saw Doonesbury. I'm just like I'm watching all the anti-gun videos. Yeah. I read Gary Trudeau. You goddamn hero, Gary. You're a monument to mankind. He said sarcastically. And Doonesbury had a thing on, yeah, these right-wing protesters, and one of the protesters starts coughing, and it's just kind of snidely done at the, they're all going to get sick. Adorable. Great, great work, Gary. But that was before George Floyd died, and then George Floyd died, and now all of a sudden people are protesting. They're not social distancing. There's a lot of people wearing masks at the protests, but not everybody. And, I'll tell you right now, I am not a kill grandma type person. I think overall being out in the fresh air, exposed to UV light and all that, I think does wonders. There's actually been several studies that are saying originally there was talk that like COVID-19 could survive for like weeks on exposed surfaces. And that may be true for, say, indoors. I think I have heard a lot of stuff about like office buildings being not a great place to be safe from any sort of contagion. But things like playgrounds, things like, you know, public places, again, things like open air cafes, a lot of places are opening up open air restaurants, though you can't necessarily eat inside a dining room. So the fact that people are out protesting is wonderful and great. But what really ticks me off is that these people are the very same people who were saying, you're killing grandma, you're being so selfish, wanting your freedoms and wanting, you know, this to end the way it was promised to end. It was only supposed to be a couple of weeks, and it's turned out to be months. And now the very same people, including the ER workers and healthcare workers, are now standing up for the Black Lives Matter protests. And again, I'm fine with the protests. I understand. It's the death of George Floyd was friggin' horrible. The Minneapolis police acted terribly on this. But you guys were just saying you can't do that, and now you're turning around. Why is it suddenly okay? And that's what bothers me, especially as someone who's a scientist, is you talk about we need to have these restrictions because the science shows that this will reduce the spread of the virus. And then suddenly something political happens and they throw it out the window. And now you go, how much of it is politics? And again, I'm a scientist. I've seen people manipulate data for the sake of politics, for the sake of, I mean, I used to work for the federal government, and they were, everything you had was public grant money. There was no private industry was funding, you know, public fisheries research. And so because of that, you want to make the numbers say what the government wants, because otherwise they'll slash your budget. If there isn't a problem, they won't see the need to fund you. So therefore, the monetary incentive at manufacturing a problem is extremely high in some of these labs. So it just irritates me so much at how thinly veiled the politics behind this goes. And there's also, now granted, there is certainly something to be said about the bluer the state you're in, more than likely the denser populated your cities are. And the denser populated your cities are, the more likely you are not only to spread a disease amongst the population of that city, but also overwhelm the medical resources within that city. And so there is some scientific background to why the map of which states voted for Hillary and which states voted for Trump, which has been thrown around, seems to line up very well to which states are getting around to opening up and actually allowing their people to go about their lives now versus the states like here in Massachusetts, where we are still locked down really tight. It's maybe not all political, but under no circumstance can you say that it is apolitical.
Yeah, I've really been upset by what I saw as demonstrations of blatant hypocrisy. And the two of them, which immediately spring to mind, there was a video, which has since been memory-holed on Twitter, where you have hospital workers in their PPE. I mean, they've got the gloves and the hair nets and the visors and the respirators and the surgical gowns. And they're outside and they are applauding the marchers who are walking past. Now, most of them are wearing masks, but still, I'm not seeing a lot of social distancing going on here. And you told us to stay home in order to save lives, and now you are outside, not social distancing, applauding them. What the heck? And then there was another article. I don't know if I can find it, because that's sort of apparently how I do things. I don't think to look them up before the podcast, because I only remember them right as we're doing them. But there was a statement made somewhere by somebody. I know that's very helpful. And it was along the lines of, don't use COVID as an excuse to stop the protests. And it was done by someone speaking as a medical authority. And my reaction was, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this entire thing was your idea. It's if we need to social distance, then we should keep social distancing now. And if the protests are okay, then at least have the integrity to say, you know what? It's summer. It's all better now. And, you know, if they did that, that would be, well, I don't know if I would call it understandable, but I could accept it. But they really do seem to be saying that some social gatherings are bad, but others are good. And it all seems very political, and that really annoys me.
Yeah, like the idea that you can gather in a protest of 100 people, and that is acceptable per purview of the government, but yet sitting down in church to exercise your First Amendment rights to worship the way you choose to is not protected and not okay. And I mean, there's the old statement of the, oh, well, you know, if you're going to have a, you have a backyard barbecue, just make sure everyone's holding signs. Or if you're somebody like David, who his father passed away, they still have not had a service for him. And I'm not sure if he's still down there right now at the time of our recording, but he has been down in Florida going through his father's effects and helping his, helping the family through this. But there's been no funeral because they can't have any gatherings. But now all of a sudden there's these huge protests showing up in every major city, and they are getting absolutely the green light from all that. It's one of those, we're mourning our dead. It's just irritating. Well, one good thing, and I hesitantly say good thing, is that there's actually a bill being put out right now. Let's see, what is it called? The Justice in Policing Act of 2020. And I say hesitantly because it's got a whole bunch of stuff that I really, really like. It's got limitations on qualified immunity,
mm-hmm.
which I really, really like. It has end on no-knock warrants. Oh my God, do I hate no-knock warrants. We should be doing everything in our power to never, ever do no-knock warrants. I'm trying to remember, but those are the two big ones that stick out. The downside is that it's also making police use of chokeholds illegal. And that really upsets me because as someone who knows a bit about the different types of chokeholds there are, yes, if you are doing a stranglehold, if you are doing a chokehold where you are obstructing someone's windpipe, you're essentially crushing the trachea. And I mean, you touch your Adam's apple, it's hard. It's because that is essentially an ossified tissue. It is hardened. It's calcified so that it is stiff, so that it stays open. If you pinch that sucker closed, you're more than likely going to damage it. And the idea that if you choke somebody unconscious by compressing their trachea, there's a good chance they may die from that. But if you do, say, a rear naked choke where you're compressing the carotid artery and the jugular vein on either side of the neck, the person loses consciousness very quickly, which does not happen with a trachea choke. They lose consciousness very, very quickly. And if you do exactly what was not done with George Floyd, is the moment the person stops struggling, the moment they lose consciousness, release the pressure, it is exceptionally safe because blood flow is restored immediately and the person is going to be unconscious. They're going to regain consciousness. They're going to be disoriented and they are going to be very easy to manipulate. And I see that as a wonderful thing. And I've actually heard many a police officer talking about how, no, that is like the best thing to do is when it comes to someone who is very, very, very combative, if you know how to do a good chokehold, if you know some jujitsu is often thrown about by police officers talking about more training. If you know some good jujitsu, you can get somebody essentially rapidly de-escalate them down, either get them so that they choose to be compliant because they know you've got the upper hand on them, or actually choke them unconscious and then quickly release the pressure, get them all cuffed, and then get them in a recovery position. When they recover, get them into the police car. That's a tool that I don't want the cops taken away because it's going to mean they're going to turn to the baton. They're going to turn to striking blows and they're going to turn to guns and tasers. And I am less comfortable with those devices, especially when you're dealing with confidence stuff. And also, there's another angle to the defund the police. Of course, there's the, you mentioned Minneapolis where they are just completely defunding the police. So the police are going to be disbanded there. But there's also, I believe, I can't remember if it was California, some other places have slashed the police budget, which is even dumber because police budget is how you get people training.
Exactly. Part of the problem here is that The officers are not trained properly. Okay, I'm not going to say that the guy who killed George Floyd was not properly trained, but it's a lot of these things can be addressed with proper training, and in order to do that, you need funding. And if you are reducing the funding, you are actually encouraging the behavior you want to curtail.
The defunding thing is definitely cutting off the nose in spite of the face. And this bill here, it's one of those like, I like so much of it, but the one thing that it does that I don't like, is it worth it? And honestly speaking, as far as I'm concerned, it probably is worth it, because I suspect police have a loud enough soapbox that they can quickly point out, no, this is a very good technique. If done properly and with the proper training, it can be a great way to de-escalate a violent encounter rather than escalate it or cause it to become deadly. Well, Aaron and I have been talking about the protest. Oddball's wife, Panya, actually went to a BLM protest in Nashville, and I wanted to hear her experiences. Also, please note, Panya had some technical glitch with her microphone while recording this, so her levels are going to wander a bit, but I felt it was a good enough recording to go through, and I really wanted to have this played today.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Storytime with Panya. You might notice that I'm not sounding quite as cheerful as usual. That's because today's story isn't as cheerful of a story as usual. Today's story is about Black Lives Matter and the protests surrounding that. This weekend, I went by myself to a protest in downtown Nashville. It wasn't one of the bigger ones, but I feel like we made ourselves heard. So let me tell you how it went. I drove downtown, and they let us all park in the parking lot of the stadium, which is good, because although there weren't very many people, the potential for there being a whole lot of people was definitely there. The people who organized this were really good at what they did. They provided water for us, they provided a lot of good direction, and they were definitely getting out the vote. There wasn't really any discussion about who you should vote for in terms of specific names, or even any kind of specific policy beyond this has got to end. But I feel like it was really good that they were thinking about the vote and about the things we have to do within the system to make a difference. If you know anything about Nashville, you know that one of its major features is a wide pedestrian bridge over the river in downtown. We all marched across that with our signs and our chants, and I noticed that there were a lot of people in the rooftops of the bars and hanging out of the windows filming us. And I wondered about that. Why weren't they with us? Why were they watching us? Were we some kind of tourist attraction? And then I thought, well, those are just the people we're going to have to educate. So we kept marching. We stopped for a long time outside of the Symphony Hall, and people spoke to us. And then we kept marching, and we stopped outside the headquarters of the police in downtown Nashville. And there were 20 or so police people lined up outside of it in their riot gear. I've never seen riot gear before. I want to say they looked dangerous, but they really didn't. They looked scared. They looked like the kind of scared that makes you hit first and ask questions later, which isn't really what we want, but definitely explains a lot about why things have happened. They're supposed to protect us, aren't they? The police? Why would they be scared of us? If you've been paying attention to the way protests have gone across the nation, you'll have probably noticed that not a lot of reports of actual rioting, actual looting, actual violence have come out of Nashville. It's because there hasn't been much. Yeah, 4 or 5 people tried badly to set fire to our courthouse. There were definitely some windows smashed, one of them in the old Ryman. But in terms of the kind of reactions that other police forces have been doing, nah. I don't think there's been any tear gas. I don't think there's been any beatings of people with batons. I don't think there's been any chasing of mildly panicky crowds of protesters. But they still stood there in their riot gear like they expected us to do something. And we knelt at them for a little while. And then we moved on. We went round and marched up Broadway. Now, Again, if you know anything about Nashville, you know that Broadway in Nashville, while not quite like Broadway in New York City, is definitely the center of downtown Nashville tourist trade. It's lined with bars. Our arena fronts on Broadway. This time, it was also lined with policemen in their riot gear. I didn't know Nashville had that many policemen. All told, I think I must have seen 100 or so. And I legitimately didn't know Nashville had that many policemen, let alone that much riot gear. It's kind of scary. Why do we need that much riot gear in Nashville? We're a city that's famed for our, call it peaceful, call it helpful response when
sugar
goes down. Yeah, I know we're just bleeped that out, but still. Tornadoes marched through our city 3 months ago. I drive past one of the schools that they smashed on a regular basis. There wasn't a whole lot of looting. There wasn't a whole lot of panicking that time. We just pushed up our sleeves and pitched in. Same thing happened with the flood 10 years ago. So why did the Nashville police have so much riot gear? What do they need it for? We walked down Broadway and we knelt. Concrete and asphalt are really hot in 95 degrees, by the way. If you're planning to go to a protest, think ahead and take not only a bottle of ice, but something to kneel on. Unless, you know, you enjoy putting yourself through pain like weird, but that's a whole other discussion. We kept going, and we went up one of the main streets toward the fronts directly onto the courthouse. We have a really nice water feature there. It was turned off. I wonder why. This is the sort of day it ought to be turned on. Were they afraid we would do something to it? Courthouse, because of people trying to set it on fire, like crazy people, was surrounded by a fence and more police officers. But we all stood there more or less quietly. I mean, you know, when you're at a protest, you chant, so there's only so much quiet. But nobody threw anything, and nobody tried to insult the cops. We all paid attention to the people we were there to hear. And after it was all over, we all picked up our bits and bobs and water bottles and marched off back across the bridges to where we'd parked. And they had water for us, and getting out of the parking lot was not easy, but it's Nashville, we're used to that. And I did a lot of thinking the whole time. Sometimes what I was thinking was, I want to maneuver to be at the edges of the crowd, because if I'm going to have privilege as a white girl, then I'm going to use that privilege to protect people if something should happen. And sometimes what I was thinking was, why does it have to be like this? We've had the civil rights movement. Shouldn't things have changed? But they didn't change enough. So we spend a lot of time in this podcast challenging people to think about what they've heard with regards to the Second Amendment. I'm going to challenge all of you, including me, right now, to spend some time thinking about the people you encounter in your everyday life, especially the people of color, and how they navigate around you, and how you navigate around them. You've probably been accidentally hurting people with assumptions that are so deeply embedded in you, you don't even realize they're there. And that's part of what this particular cluster of protests is about. Being more aware. Be aware of the people around you. I'll finish up with a little tiny piece that's a little more detailed about what happened to me. As we were standing outside the symphony, I was moving to get a better look at the cross street. And there was a really tall, skinny black dude leaning up against the fence with his mask and his sunglasses on. And as I slipped past him in the 3 feet of space there, he said, "Excuse me." And I thought, he didn't need to say that. I wasn't that close to him. Wasn't about to brush him. He wasn't in my way. So after they finished talking, I went back to him and I said, "You didn't need to say that." And he said, "Well, I'm just trying to be polite." And I looked up at him and I said, "Okay, I'm trying to be thoughtful. And if you said excuse me because you were being polite, then that's good. But if you said excuse me because you're a tall black guy, then that's bad." And he looked at me for a minute, and then he stuck out his hand. We shook hands. I believe him when he said he was trying to be polite. But the fact remains that there are black guys out there in the world who would have said it because they didn't want a white girl to think bad of them Or more correctly, they would have said it because they believed that they'd get in trouble if they didn't say it to a white girl. That's what has to change. They have to not believe that. They have to believe that they're allowed to take up the same space in the world that we do. And we have to give them that space. I've run a little over now, and this hasn't been as happy of a story as some of the others. But I hope that you've taken the whole time to listen, and I hope that you've thought about some things. I'll make sure that my contact information is in the show notes, and if you decide that you want to do some of the same learning that I'm doing, I'll be happy to help you with that.
That was a really great perspective, and I know that, let's face it, we're a gun podcast. There's a whole bunch of right-wing people and libertarian people listening to this. I mean, this, I know the market, and that was specifically one of the reasons why I wanted to hear Panya's take, because I know that she is the left of us, and I think we need to hear this. We need to be coming together and not being polarized. So if you disagreed with Panya, you know what? That's okay, but I really do think she had some great points to be made in there, especially about listening to other people and really kind of extending friendship across it, even when it's not specifically asked for. So I think that's awesome, and I think we need a whole lot more of that.
I agree. I'm also going to predict that this segment is going to cause some controversy among our listeners, because there are some people who, when they hear the words BLM, they twitch a little bit. And I do have to confess that I am kind of one of those people, and it's not because I specifically have anything against the message of Black Lives Matter. I just remember all the stuff from, you know, going back a few years ago. And it's a case of the message is good, but just like in gun culture, you've got your jerks everywhere. And so that's what I want our listeners to come away with. Just listen to it with an open mind and try not to judge Panya or the message based upon the actions of some bad people.
Oh, and also for Panya, she was talking about, she said, I didn't know we had that many police and that much riot gear. And for most of these, when there is an event that is drawing a lot of police resources, they tend to pull people from departments all over, well into the hinterland. So there was probably state police officers. There were probably county officers, and there were probably people from surrounding towns that had come in.
Mm.
As for why they need all the riot gear, I've said this a bunch of times. I really do. I dislike the militarization of police. I don't like how much we have come into instead of a public servant, as opposed to your friend and your neighbor. And, you know, my job is doing research in the lab or making a podcast. His job is catching the bad guys and maintaining the peace. Just a community standard to the more antagonistic relationship, which I really think came about with the war on drugs. And having the military hardware that they get, the military gear, the riot gear, all of that. I mean, I understand the usefulness of it. And certainly when we had the riots going on, I'm not going to expect, you know, beat officers in just their standard cop uniforms dealing with a riot to that level. But at the same time, I really do see a lot of problems that both in having police officers that are in, you know, military style gear, riding around in military vehicles, and being a lot of former military people. I can imagine that could get confusing even for them. And I don't think that helps us. And I've said multiple times, I think when you read about the U.S. Constitution, there's a lot of talk about in the early times about standing armies and about how we can't have a standing army. And it seems kind of silly when you hear about it first, because you're like, well, we've got full-time military. I know people that, you know, live their whole career in the military, and, you know, certainly, you know, when I was younger in the 90s, we, you know, in between Vietnam and the Gulf War, it was just Cold War, and I understand that was a very serious war, and it was a strong conflict, but it didn't have the same oomph of an actual shooting war, and yet there were people that lived their whole career in the military, and yeah, I don't really see a problem with the standing armies. And then you see stuff like SWAT teams and no-knock raids and all of these things, and raids that don't need the MRAP and the people with the submachine guns and the battle rattle. And it just looks like we're just justifying a budget item. And I really do think that those are the standing army that our founding fathers warned us against.
I absolutely agree.
Oddball mentioned the other day that he had found a used Smith & Wesson revolver that I personally consider a must-have, as well as a super rare find. So I might have pestered him and Panya a bit about not letting the deal of a lifetime pass them by. In chronicling his purchase, he got some more observations on what gun stores are like in the middle of the COVID gun rush.
Welcome to Oddball's Corner Pocket. Today, I thought I'd do something a little different. As I'm sure you're aware, things have been interesting recently, and it's caused a bit of a surge in gun sales. And me, being the silly person that I am, decided that now would be a wonderful time to buy another one. Well, that's not what I really meant to do. What I meant to do was pick up a gun that needed some love from the gunsmith. While I was waiting to pick it up, I was browsing the used case and saw a Smith & Wesson 6.17 22 long rifle revolver. I knew that Weird owns one and can't shut up about how great it is. And the price they were asking for it was very nice. I actually didn't go home with it that night. I needed to talk to Panya about a few money matters first. And after some mild begging, bartering, and possibly puppy dog eyes, I was given the go-ahead to go back to the shop and buy the revolver this past Thursday. As busy as the shop was on that Monday, it was even more busy on Thursday. Fortunately, they still had said revolver, and as soon as I had a chance, I told the guy behind the counter that I'd buy it. He did warn me that the background check was taking a while, and that it might actually be the next day before they heard back. I filled out the paperwork on their laptop, this is a larger shop that files everything electronically, and decided to hang around for a bit. I realized that there were at least five guys there waiting for their checks to come back in front of mine, and that it probably wasn't going to happen that night. But I didn't really feel like jumping into rush hour traffic either. I did overhear the employees working with a lot of first-time buyers. I will have to say that it was common for the employee to tell them that they would normally recommend renting a few to try out, but they weren't currently renting guns due to the COVID stuff. I had to really bite my lip when the husband-wife couple came in, and the husband was pushing her to check out the 38 Snubby because, quote, it was so simple. Everyone was looking at defensive guns, and in fact, there was another 6.17 and a Model 18 Combat Masterpiece sitting right next to mine, and no one was even glancing at them. Oh, and there was a sign on the door coming in stating that they were out of all defensive 9mm ammo. After about 40 minutes and checking out everything in the shop, I think there were only three people in front of me, and I decided to make sure that they had my number and that I'd come back. I did finally get a call from them saying that they had just got the background check back around noon on Friday. As soon as I could get away from work, I rushed down to pick up my new purchase. As should be expected, they were at least as busy on Friday as they were on Thursday. It took me probably 30 minutes to flag down someone behind the counter. They had me fill out some more paperwork since I had started the process and left. I paid them and left. Oh, and they did apologize for the long wait, even though it wasn't them that was holding it up. So, to summarize, due to stress on the system, because so many folks are buying guns right now, it took them from 5 p.m. one evening to noon the next day to deal with my check, which probably instantly came back with, yeah, this guy has a carry permit, just bought a gun a couple weeks ago, and is boringly clean. Oh, and it was from a shop that I had bought guns from in the past, and I was picking up a gun from their gunsmith, so the folks at the shop could be fairly certain I was clean. On a side note, please, learn basic maintenance of your firearms. While I was there, I witnessed one Hispanic gentleman asking if the smith could clean his pimped-out Glock 19 because he was afraid that he was going to mess it up. The guy behind the counter showed him what he needed to do and told him to buy a cleaning kit, which he promptly did. I also saw a middle-aged black lady bring in her Phoenix Arms 25 to be cleaned. This one needed a bit more help. It had been bouncing around in her purse, had some glitter and other stuff stuck to it, and was having issues cycling. I got talking to her and recommended that she get a cleaning kit to clean it after she got it back.
Glitter, yes!
I also gently suggested that she either get a purse that had a built-in holster, or at least a pocket holster and some Velcro. She also told me that she had a Taurus 9mm on order. Given what she was currently carrying, I told her that I was happy to hear that, and that the Taurus was definitely a step up in quality. I guess the moral of this story is that there are a lot of folks that are hopefully joining our side right now. This is a good thing, but it also means that navigating the red tape, even if it's supposed to be instant, will take a little while right now. If you know folks that are feeling the need to arm themselves, now is the time that we really need to step up and help. Hopefully, I'll get back to my normal knife talk in the next segment. If you'd like to read more of my thoughts, I write at gunscarstech.com. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts for future segments, I can be reached at oddball@gunscarstech.com or on the Assorted Calibers podcast Facebook group. Until next time, have a good one.
So apparently Tennessee does things differently than here in Florida, and it's one of the few times when they don't do it as well, because here in Florida, and I think maybe the way they do it in Massachusetts, you're going to tell me, is that if you have a concealed carry permit, you can just bypass that background check altogether, because they figure you've got the permit, so we don't need to check you again, you're good. And so there's no NICS check, no calling it in, no waiting period. I mean, I still have to fill out the form 4473, but other than that, it's like I fill it out and I get my gun and I can go.
Yeah, no, Massachusetts is one of the states that does not have its own NICS system, so unlike Florida. And yeah, so instead in Massachusetts, yeah, you just fill it out. Doesn't matter if you have to show your permit, because you have to have a permit to possess a firearm in Massachusetts. And so therefore the permit must be presented to the gun shop before buying firearms or ammunition. But yeah, then it's just a 4473 and they call in directly to the FBI.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that's how Florida does it too. From what I recall, there are very few states that actually have their own NICS system.
Yeah, no, there's, yeah, it's, I couldn't name them all, but yeah, it's like, I think it's less than 10. And also, I want to congratulate Oddball for getting himself a Smith & Wesson 6.17 revolver. It is one of my most favorite guns, and he mentioned he saw a used one, and I'm like, dude, jump on that. You never see them used. Like, the only used 6.17 revolver I have ever seen in a gun case is right beside me right now. And That gun's going to my daughter. It's never leaving my possession. It is just the most fun you can have in public with your clothes on.
Well, then.
And speaking of well, then, how about the Glitter Phoenix, Aaron? I remember when my nephew, I think he might have just turned 18. He was fairly young, and as fairly young men are, completely broke, and we were up at our camp in Vermont, and when I go up there, I just grab every like gun magazine and thing on there that I haven't had a chance to read. So I do most of my like gun reading on the internet when I'm near a computer, and suddenly when I'm at camp and I don't have an internet connection, I read all the paper stuff. And then I just hand them off to the nephews who all love the gun stuff and they don't have as many subscriptions to various things as I do. And I remember him looking through one of the dealer catalogs that I got through my my Curio and Relic license. And he was like looking at the guns, and clearly in that, haven't really been looking at the price of guns and don't have many dollars to rub together, and just sticker shock of the, oh God, that looks cool. Can't afford that. Can't afford that. Can't afford that. And then he pointed out to me, oh, Phoenix Arms, like $100. How are these? Are they any good? I'm like, no.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask. I've never heard of Phoenix Arms, and the fact that I haven't heard of them makes me wonder as to their quality. And so I wondered where they were, you know, on a scale of like Jimenez to High Point.
I don't know if it's Jimenez or Lorsen or one of those, but literally, when one of those companies went bankrupt, Phoenix Arms took over their tooling and started building guns again under that name. And so Phoenix is literally, they are rising from the ashes of a turd gun company that went out of business. So yes, they are pot metal junk on par with Raven, Lorsen, and Jimenez.
Yes, I caught the subtle shade that Oddball was throwing when she asked him, or when she mentioned she had a Taurus or is getting a Taurus, and he said yes, that would be an upgrade, because, well, yeah, in comparison it's much better.
Yeah, he said it kind of was painful to tell her, yeah, that was a good choice, but I'm like, you're not wrong, it's a qualified good choice. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibers podcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like the hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film track, and the ACP mag dump.
It sounded like you said podcast. Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off, even if they're frogs.
Oh, so you did say podcast. You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
Blah, 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 blah. You know where to find me. I'm all over the place. Lurking Rhythmically, Pink Pistols, OBS, Blue Collar Prepping, etc., etc. And if you are anywhere near Dalton, Georgia, well, if you're not a patron, it's too late. But if you are a patron, you might have time to run up to Dalton, Georgia, and catch me for confinement. And I'll be giving a presentation on, I think, Saturday? I don't know. It's all kind of up in the air. It's more like what you call guidelines.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
You know, if I was really quick on my feet, I would do something involving, you know, ponds and frogs and feeling froggy and the Frogger video game and...
I love Frogger. Oh, that's a good one.
You know, you would think that a little frog would have a small enough clearance that a car would just roll over it without crushing it. But no, that doesn't make sense. Oh.
Well, except for Frogger's a true story.
Oh.
That it was actually the video game designer was living in, I think, Florida. I think it was either Florida or someplace, but there's a certain place where the frogs migrate to spawn. It's all about frog sex. And they migrate to spawn, and there was a highway that was in between there. And literally on spawning season, the highway is just covered in giblets because of all the frogs hopping across the road and getting squished by the cars.
Now say that word again, please. The one that began with a G.
Giblets.
I could have sworn you said giblets the first time.
No. No, I do not say that.
Oh.
And it irritates me when people do. Are you a giblet person?
Hey, I call them giblets.
Giblets. Chafe. It's all pronounced chafe.
or Jaif or whatever. I'm totally over this shit. So there's actually a road like that in, I want to say, New Zealand, but instead of frogs, it's crabs, because they wake up from their hibernating place in like a stream bed, and they bury themselves in the mud, and then they wake up and they have to cross back out in the ocean to spawn, and they have to cross a busy road, and a lot of them get creamed. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's going to smell friggin' terrible. Dead frogs, they really don't get too offensive. Dead crab, ugh.
So, he's feeling a bit crabby, and I'm froggish and I gotta leave. Our whatever styles are assorted, and so's our podcast. I'm reaching. Good night, everybody.
Good night.